Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your co-host, Colin Stewart. Today we have a bit of a special event. Last week, we just launched our 52nd episode. We've heard lots of feedback from many users or many listeners, and a lot of it positive, but a few of them recently pointed out one thing, that my mic level was really, really low. So I hope you're noticing that we've got a much louder mic now. I got a little piece of hardware that's hopefully correcting that. So for those of you that have heard that, we're going to go back and get our editors to boost up the audio levels on some of those old episodes. So if you were among those that would be in your car and having to play with the volume knob to turn up my audio when I got quiet and turn it back down when the guest spoke, well, we're hoping to have all of those fixed real soon. But moving forward, we've got same mic, but a new amplifier sitting in front of it. So hopefully I'm coming through loud and clear. I want to take a few minutes and introduce our guest today, because I'm personally been really excited. Mike and I had this did our pre-interview 2 weeks ago, and some of the things that we talked about in the pre-interview, I started practicing myself and have been seeing some pretty strong results that I'm really excited about. I've been reading a lot on the subject for a couple of years, but I'm very early into my journey here. And I had the pleasure of bumping into Mike at AAISP last month, and he's much, much further down. So our guest today has been selling for 20 years. He's been the top 5% of every sales class he's been in. And he's currently at DocuSign, where, Mike, you were a quota-carrying rep for 6 years, and you hit President's Club 5 of those 6 years.
Yeah.
Now you do basically teaching and training. You're the senior director of sales productivity at DocuSign. So they've basically said, all right, you crush your quota all the time. You're so consistent at it. Can you teach everybody else how to be, how to replicate some of your success? Fair to say?
Yeah, it's accurate.
Right on. Well, Mike Fiascone, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks, Colin. Appreciate you having me.
I'm really looking forward to this. So today we want to talk about your formula for creating superhuman sales reps. So what is this formula, and why should we care?
Well, being in sales for so long, I've been involved in so many trainings, from negotiation to discovery to close plans to mapping out accounts, a lot of great stuff. And I learned so much along the way. But there was a moment in my career about 10 to 12 years ago where I went through some personal challenges that forced me to really evaluate who was I and how do I deal with stress. And I started realizing that if I applied these techniques and methodologies to my own personal life of dealing with stress, developing better relationships, not taking things so personal, that when I applied it to my business, my numbers just exploded. I had more fun. My customers enjoyed working with me more. And I decided that this is definitely, there's something here. And so I learned a very simple process that anybody can do. It only takes about a minute or two to really deal with stress and anxiety in sales. Because it's not just what we do, but it's how we do it and who we are. The trainings out there deal with the tactical stuff of what our hands need to do with certain tasks and activities. But we sometimes forget that there's a brain attached to those hands. And if we don't address the mind, because everything begins with a thought, and we don't address the mind, then we're not going to be able to really, we're not going to be able to manage long-term change. And so this process of creating a superhuman sales rep starts with the mind. And the mind creates thoughts. And those thoughts create emotions. And emotions is what drive actions. And so it's the mind, heart, and will. And when all three of those are in an alignment, you have a superhuman seller. And it is amazing. People want to work with them. They get more resources. They get access to accounts. They get higher level. They are more thoughtful in the way that they deliver. They listen more than talking. And it just starts to compound. So, yeah, that's really the process, that the journey that I've been on for quite a while.
That's really exciting. I think my journey kicked off. I mean, I've been reading nearly every sales book I can get my hands on. And recently, a couple of years ago, I started saying, okay, you know, you keep hearing the same books referenced over and over and over again. I said, okay, I'm going to start going directly to the source, you know, and reading the books that they're referencing. And I think the big one that really sort of opened my mind was Thinking Fast and Slow, Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky. And it's, they won a Nobel Prize for their work. And it really sort of outlined to me, it showed me like how the brain works and all the different biases we have and all the different ways that it's sort of broken and not really designed for the job that we're asking it to do for us. And so that was sort of my like big eye-opening moment. It sounds like you had that quite a few years ago.
I did, yeah. When I learned how the brain really works, and I learned it from doctors, and I read books, and I went to seminars, and a friend of mine who I'm really close with is a holistic practitioner and a doctor and an international speaker and writer. And so I've immersed myself in how the brain works. I'm not a medical person myself, but it's actually fairly simple. You know, the brain, there's three components to it. There's the neocortex, which is the frontal lobe area. And that's where we have human language, thoughts, imagination. That's only 2 to 10%, and that's our conscious mind, the neocortex. Then there's the limbic and reptilian brains. And the limbic is where our emotional center is, our behaviors, our motivation, our judgment, long-term memory. And then the reptilian brain is the oldest brain. That's what controls our bodily functions, such as heart rate or breathing or body temperature. And the limbic and reptilian are subconscious, meaning we're not aware of what's happening there. And 90 to 98% of our mind is subconscious. Only 2 to 10% is conscious, the neocortex, where we choose our thoughts. So most of our mind is subconscious for a reason, for protection. We can't be aware of all of these things that are happening. If I were to shine a light in your eyes, your pupil will dilate. You didn't have to think about dilating your pupils. Or if you take a hammer and you tap, you know, below your kneecap, your leg is just going to flinch. You didn't have to think about that. There are trillions of cells in our bodies that are working in harmony. And thank God we don't have to think about all that stuff. It is autonomic, automatic, reflexive. Those are the terminologies for the 95, 98% of our mind that is subconscious. Now, here's the interesting part. When we're in a moment of stress or fear or anxiety, and when we don't have the tools to deal with a particular situation, there's a protectionary reflex that our system does automatically and stores that experience into our subconscious mind for protection. It stores it. But it doesn't go away. It just becomes part of our psyche. And when there's an automatic reflexive feel, things will bubble to the surface. And our body and our life speaks to us through stress and through symptoms. That's how it communicates to us. So we know that there is a buried treasure in our subconscious mind when we're experiencing things that are automatic and we wouldn't choose it. For example, maybe we're fearful. We're afraid to call an executive in an account. Would you choose fear, Colin, if you had a choice given it? Would you choose to experience fear?
No, not by choice.
No, hell no. You would not choose that. Yet you're experiencing that fear. So if you wouldn't choose it, it must be coming from the part of our mind where there is no choice. It's the autonomic, automatic, reflexive part of our mind, which is subconscious. But what we're aware of is the fear, which is a symptom of that buried treasure. And the buried treasure might be from when you were 7 years old and you were in an environment where you didn't feel safe. And if you didn't feel safe, you didn't have the tools to deal with it, you internalized, disconnected for protectionary mechanisms. And the gift in strange wrapping paper is that you experience fear in particular situations. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is you don't have to do that long term. There's actually a simple way to harmonize these symptoms, to be aware of the root cause and then shift it into what you do want. You can do this, and Olympic athletes have done this, and CEOs use this technique, and it is amazing, you know. And so that's really how the brain works, and being aware of some of these subconscious reactions that are limiting beliefs and limit our success in sales, and quite frankly, push people away mm-hmm. from us.
Now, before we jump into these techniques, because we're definitely going to go into this a little bit deeper into the show, but I'd love to, why don't we start at the top with what, talk to me about what separates really good reps from top reps. Because I find it's, you know, you read all the books, you get all the training, you get the tactics, and there can be a massive difference in the performance of a really good rep and your number one rep. So I know you've seen this because you train these reps. You were this rep.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what separates the good from the great.
Well, a general statement is that, of course, what they do is high quality, and they take action, and they work hard, and they are smart about positioning value. They put themselves in their customer's shoes. You know, they do a lot of great things. But what makes the extraordinary reps from the good reps, it's not what they do, it's who they are as they're doing it. Two reps could do the same activities. One has higher degree of success because the way that they're doing it, who they are as a person when they're doing these things, is of a higher caliber. They're like vibrating at a higher frequency. And it's always around love and gratitude. And those that are vibrating at that love and gratitude while they're doing these important tasks are extraordinary. And I'd say there's three core components that extraordinary reps do. One, they have a mindset, a very powerful mindset of gratitude, of an executive. They look at their business as a CEO. They're comfortable being uncomfortable. They are open to possibilities. They have a mindset of, I can get to the CEO. I'm going to get there. Let's have fun with it. They're playful. They're like children. They just have fun. They take action and have fun. And that mindset, that executive mindset, is the most important factor. The second thing they do is they really research their accounts. They go in annual reports. They read a letter from the CEO. They look at videos on YouTube. They Google the CEO. They look at news articles. They go to Glassdoor to see what employees are saying. They go to LinkedIn and Twitter. And they really research the account and the people. And they get a feel for who these people are and what they care about. That way you can relate your message to those folks. And then the third thing is leverage. They are really good at leveraging other customers, leveraging their coworkers, leveraging their partners, leveraging anyone to help bring in a crew and delegate some activities. So having an executive mindset that's optimistic and positive and full of gratitude and, you know, free to be open to possibilities. They do research really good, understand their account, and they leverage people. I'd say those are the three key reasons.
Because it's the number one reps, like you said, that book those top meetings, they believe that they're worthy of booking those meetings.
They do. They believe. I've interviewed a number of reps on this topic, and there's a few that I've worked with that I'm so impressed at their ability to get executive meetings. There's a guy I know, a young man who's 28 years old. He is now one of the vice presidents of sales here at DocuSign. The folks on his team, the average age is they're 50 years old, the reps on his team. This guy he exudes executive presence. He has had more CEO meetings at Fortune 500 companies than I ever have in my entire career. And this guy is 28 years old.
Wow.
When you meet him, he's such a joy to be around. He's smiling all the time. He just takes action without emotion. And he demands that he gets meetings with these high-level executives. He totally expects it. He knows that he's worthy, that he deserves it, and that their company wants to have these meetings, that that you have something of value to bring to them, and that's rare. Most sellers I talk to, there's a certain level within an organization where they hit this wall. They hit a ceiling of comfortableness, and there's a point where they're uncomfortable. And sometimes it's at a manager to director level, sometimes a director to VP, sometimes a senior VP or C level. I had that. I got to the VPs all the time, but something in me thought, well, why would a CEO or COO of a Fortune 500 company take a meeting with me? I'm so small in my companies. And I had a limiting belief. And I worked on that, and I modeled myself after others who got executives. And I said, hell, if they could do it, then why can't I do it? And I did get a couple of those meetings. And then it just started to snowball. And now I'm kind of like that 28-year-old guy now. Now I expect to have CEO meetings, and they happen all the time. They really do. It's so fun.
Yeah. You said it all sort of starts with a thought, and emotions drive our actions. And, you know, there's the self-limiting beliefs that sort of get in the way. You know, I find that some people are more sort of naturally more ambitious.
Yeah.
Can we train ourselves? Like, if we're not a naturally ambitious person, or if we have these self-limiting beliefs that, because like, just like you, there was no actual factual evidence that you had that said you were not worthy of a meeting with the CEO. You know, in fact, you just had to go out there and sort of just do it. And that sort of proved it to yourself. Is there a way that we can train ourselves to push ourselves outside our comfort zone?
Yes. For the first thing is awareness. I mean, it really comes down to first just being aware. So the best way to do that is if I'm feeling something and it doesn't feel good to me, I'll ask myself this question: would I choose to feel this way? If the answer is no, then I know it's coming from a subconscious place. So that right there, as simple as that sounds, is absolutely profound. Because now that you're aware, you don't have to take it personally. You just treat it neutral, like a reporter is just writing a story about something happening, and there's no emotion behind it. Oh, I'm now experiencing subconscious reaction right now based on a belief structure that was programmed by my parents and by my family and culture and society and geography and religion and culture. I mean, all of these things go into programming us when we're a child. We've all been programmed, and all beliefs are learned. Just because you learn something doesn't mean it's true. So we go out in the world, and some of the code that we're programmed by is so efficient, and it runs, and it's amazing, and it's some of our greatest skills and assets. But then some of the code that we're programmed by has bugs in it, and the QA process wasn't so good back then. But these people that programmed us did the best they knew how, given the tools they were given. But it doesn't have to mean that is how we have to live the rest of our life. So being aware that it's a subconscious reaction is the first step. Once you're aware, then I go through a process to harmonize and to give that emotion some space and to process it. And I do it through a three-step process: see it, feel it, and hear it. See it, feel it, and hear it. And there's a lot of science behind this, a lot of science, because we experience life through our senses. There are things called protein receptors that pick up information, and then it filters it through our brain based on our belief system. And then we interpret it through a lens of perception. No one looks at life the same way. We all have different sunglasses that we're wearing. So the see it, feel it, hear it. I'll say, okay, boom. I'm going to here's an example. Send a proposal to a customer, procurement sends back and says, you need to sharpen your pencil. Competition is half your price. I need a decision. I need it back by tomorrow. Otherwise we're going to competition. Immediately I feel a trigger of anxiety and anger, perhaps, but mostly anxiety. Would I choose to feel anxious? No, I wouldn't choose it if I had a choice. Okay, good. So that must be a subconscious reaction. Okay, so let me go through the see it, feel it, hear it. First, I do is I close my eyes and I say, okay, I'm going to be aware of any pictures and images in my mind right now related to anxiety, no matter what or who I think about, no matter where it takes me. When I bring up the concept of anxiety, I observe my first and immediate thoughts. And so what I'm seeing is like, I don't get a deal. My manager is going to be mad at me. I may lose my job. My wife's going to be mad at me. Whatever images show up, heck, it could be images of when I was 7 years old and I was in that environment where I didn't feel safe or worthy. I don't know. I don't judge it. I'm a reporter. I'm looking at it neutral. But I see the images of anxiety in my mind's eye, that movie theater in your mind. Then I feel it. And feel it is in your body. But before I go to feel it, to see it, while you're observing the images, it's important to breathe through it. And I like to use the American Sign Language, I love you. It's just something I use. You don't have to. I like to put my hand over my heart and give myself love and support. And I see those images and I breathe. I breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. Then I go into feel it. Okay, where does anxiety, how does that feel physically in my body? Where do I feel it? And I describe it. Well, anxiety to me is like tightness in my chest. I feel like strain in my left neck. I tune into my physical body and I do my best to describe what that feeling literally feels like. And if you don't feel like you can feel an emotion in your body, they're there. You just may be blocking it. Settle into yourself and just say, well, I'll just make it up. I wonder what it might feel like and tune into it. You'll notice that there is some subtle feelings. These emotions, literally, you can feel them in different sections of your body. And while you do that, you breathe in and breathe out. Okay, and the last thing is hear it. You know that self-talk in your mind? You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, that inner monologue saying.
Yeah, that monologue, we all have it. And so this is the voice of anxiety. And I just want to turn the volume up on that voice and allow it to say whatever it needs to say. Oh, God, you're going to have to drop your pants on this one. And there's no way you're going to get this deal. And the competition's got a good enough product. And maybe you should go 40%. And boy, this is a lot harder than I thought. Whatever that anxious voice needs to say, give it some space to say it, but observe it from a place of neutrality, like a reporter. Give yourself love while you're listening to it. Breathe in and breathe out. See it, feel it, hear it. Takes about 30 seconds, maybe a minute. I feel better already just by going through that process. But that's just half of the process. That's the harmonization of the subconscious emotion that you wouldn't choose, which is inhibiting your ability to get where you need to go. But the good news is that there's a gift here. When you finally process this and then you shift it into the direction that you do want, new power comes forth. Power that probably wouldn't have been there before. So I get excited when I have stress and anxiety and subconscious reactions now. I actually get excited because I'm like, awesome. I'm now ready to finally address some limiting belief that I can let go and then shift it to what I do want. So rather than feeling anxiety, rather than being anxious about this proposal that I've sent, what would I choose to feel if I had a choice? Oh, God, I would choose to feel confident and like excited, you know, because that means this guy's playing ball and we got a deal on the table. So I'm going to run that. And the thing about the brain is it's smart in so many ways, but it's kind of dumb in other ways. The brain doesn't know the difference between memory, imagination, or reality. It doesn't know the difference. It's just data, and it collects that data and interprets it the same. And you know this because, like, you know, when I look at really good food and I read a recipe and I see the picture of the food online, I get hungry. You know, I start to salivate and I'm like, man, I want to eat.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't hungry before, but my brain looked at colors and pictures and images, and then through the belief system, it pretended as if it's got food in front of it. Or when you wake up from a nightmare, and your body's in a cold sweat. It reacts as if this stuff's happening right now. That's an important point. So when you're rewiring your brain, you want to pretend this stuff's happening right now. So rather than being anxiety, I am, and if it were to happen right now, you would put it in a present tense, like I am doing something. I am delivering this proposal, or I am responding to this person, and I feel confident, feeling confident. I am confident. I am confident. I am confident. I am confident. And I just say that over and over and over, and I run that through a see it, feel it, hear it. Okay, confidence. Observe the pictures and images in the movie theater of my mind related to confidence. Well, I see, going up to a manager, I see us getting approval, I see delivering this pitch because I believe in the product and the value. Whatever images around confidence, I observe it and I breathe. And then I feel that confidence in my body. Like I can feel stronger, I can feel stable, I can feel like, you know, easier to breathe. Breathe through it. And then I turn that volume up on that voice inside my head of, I am confident. I'm delivering this proposal and I feel confident. And I'll turn the volume up and be like, dude, they need your product. You got this. You did everything. It's okay. Even if you don't get the deal, you believe in it and you got to follow your heart and be confident and just hold the line. Bring in other managers. Bring in your VP. Escalate this. You know, you got this. That's the voice of confidence. In, out. Wow. Man, I feel good. I literally feel like super good, like a superhuman right now. So when I responded to that email to that procurement person and said I needed to sharpen my pencil, and competition's half the price, imagine the superhero rep that responds vibrating at this way versus the regular rep who's responding from a place of anxiety. Do you think there's a difference in how it's received on the other end?
I think there's a difference on their commission check too.
And there's a difference on their commission check. And there's a difference in their life. And their relationships are more meaningful. And they have more joy in their life. And. And by the way, your pocketbook, it definitely impacts it. So there's really no downside. It's free. Anyone can do it. You just need to be aware and you need to do it.
On that that feel it, hear it piece, when you're talking about, take that anxiety that you're feeling and turn up the volume. It seems counterintuitive, right? Because why would you want to turn up a negative emotion?
Because it wants to be heard. It wants to be heard. That's how you harmonize and how you process these buried beliefs. Basically, they're symptoms, and they're showing you that there's a core limiting belief buried in your subconscious, and it's manifesting itself as an anxiousness. And so it just wants to be heard. It's like a child. So you turn the volume up to allow it to say what it needs to say, but you're just watching it from a neutral place, because we all have these. Like nobody is immune to these things. It's just, we're human. And so turning the volume brings it to the surface from a place of appreciation and respect and gratitude and giving that voice. You'll notice that the voice will wane kind of quickly. It'll actually start to shift to be a positive voice once you process it.
Because I think you're saying the voice just needs to be heard, and by trying to fight it, you're almost, it's like a child that just wants to be heard. If you keep trying to tell it to shut up and shut up and shut up, it's going to get louder and louder and louder.
It will get louder and louder. It will speak to you through stress and literally physical symptoms. And it will get louder like an alarm bell. It will just keep, it's not going to go away. You may be able to hit the snooze button on it right now by burying it and shoving it down, but it's going to come back. It's going to bite you. It is going to sabotage you. It is going to limit you in some way. It's not going away. So it's better to just deal with it now and let it go and then shift it to what you do want and then just keep doing that. And, you know, I'm at the point now where I'm doing it like 30 or 50 times a day. You know, I'm wired that way to catch these reactive components, breathe through it and shift it. And as you do that, you don't experience as many negative emotions over time, you know. But it's a muscle. You got to flex it out. You got to work it out, just like any kind of training regimen. It's not a one and done thing.
Mm-hmm. This is the piece that I've sort of picked up from our last interview that I've been observing myself. You know, when I feel anxious, is just sort of do the. I didn't know about the sign language for love. That's a cool piece that you do there. But I've just been sort of initially I had to in order to get my when I was taking the first steps to get my mind around it, to get my hands on it, I really had to sit there for a couple of minutes and just breathe and just to like calm myself and get to a place where I could, you know, manage this and handle that conversation, that internal conversation.
Yeah.
Because it was challenging when it's almost like it's this runner. When you push off and just try and fight it and push off that emotion and push off and don't give it that voice for so long, it bounces up to this level that's almost at maximum.
Right.
Right. Because you've just been saying no, 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 no.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're able to sort of control that and say, okay, I can hear it. I'm able to handle this. I'm going to turn up the volume and let it say its piece and sort of stand off to the side from out here and just like observe this emotion your head and say, okay, I feel this and that's okay. I'm just going
to. Okay. Totally okay to feel it because I'm feeling it and I can't control it. Mm-hmm. It's an autonomic, automatic, reflexive. There's just no choice. I don't have a choice. It's just coming to my awareness. So I can't judge myself for feeling this way because I'm feeling this way and it's totally okay. But I have to observe it and realize I wouldn't choose it and say, okay, thank you for protecting me when I was 7 years old in an environment of not feeling worthy. Mm-hmm. Based on the best that they knew how at that time, whoever was around me at that time, thank you for protecting me at that point. I just don't need that protection anymore. I'm ready to let go. Let me just breathe through it and shift it into what I do want. And you can actually rewire it and you can reprogram it. I've seen it and I've seen miracles happen. I've seen financial miracles. I've seen physical improvements in people's health. I know that our bodies and our life are designed to heal, regenerate, and be whole. And there is an intelligence there. When we cut ourselves, it just knows to heal itself. Mm-hmm. So, but with the symptoms and the stress, we have to harmonize that in order to accelerate the healing process.
It's interesting because you get into, I personally got into this, you know, and I've read Carol Dweck's book on mindset, but you forget these pieces at these times of anxiety that the brain is malleable. Like you said, it's a muscle that can be worked out.
Yeah.
It's not a framework that's set in stone. It is something that you can actually change. And it's funny that at these times when you're most stressed, when you're under the most amount of, you know, anxiety, you forget about these fundamentals, the things that you already know. And it took me a while to get, you know, just to get my head around, okay, this is something that I can deal with. I can just let this pass through. And like I had two concussions from hockey 2 years ago, and I was getting, still getting like this anxiety every now and then. And it was totally, you know, nothing, it related to nothing. There was no actual physical cause. Mm-hmm. I was in no danger. It was just this sort of like, you know, part of the healing process and just going through this process of, okay, taking a minute. Okay. Would I choose to feel this way? Is there any actual reason? Do I have any physical proof? Are there any facts that show like, is there a tiger hiding under my desk that I should be afraid of? No, Tony's not down there. Okay. You know, let's move on. Okay. Now like, let's observe, turn up the volume, you know, let it say its piece, but then just sort of let that pass through. And I haven't quite got to the, I haven't mastered or come close to being able to choose my own emotions yet. It's something I'm still working on, but I got to say just having the initial control to realize that, hey, I'm reacting this way and it's okay. And to be able to harness that and say, you know what, I'm not going to let this piece or this like emotion control me. I'm going to feel it. I'm going to let it move on. And now it used to, you know, it could almost like derail a day, right? When you get to that point.
Oh, yeah.
And now I can feel it come on, and I breathe a couple times, and it gets shorter and shorter and shorter. And every day that's gone on, you feel it. I felt it less and less and less. And this has only been a couple of weeks.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it really is interesting, because when you have a bad morning, and it just sets up your whole day, and you wake up angry, you just find situations to be even more angry about, because you're viewing yourself and the world around you through a lens of anger. Mm-hmm. And so you see angry situations everywhere. And then that's just not helping your business. And it's not helping your physical body and your emotional sanity. And mm-hmm. So your best gift to yourself, forget about anybody else, but the best gift to yourself is to say, I would not choose this. Let me just take a pause, take a moment. Let me just give this emotion some frickin' space. And let me see it. Let me feel it. Let me hear it. And let me breathe through it and let it go. And then you have to shift to the next part. You can't just be hanging out there in this like triggered space, you know, it's subconscious triggered. But you then shift it. Rather than feeling angry, I want to feel happy. I want to be excited. And it seems weird at first, because you're like, but I'm not happy. So I'm not, why am I lying to myself? The brain doesn't know the difference between memory, imagination, or reality. It really doesn't. So you got to fake it until you make it. And so, you know, I am happy. I am happy. I am happy. That's your intention. Your intention is to be happy. Declare that to the universe. Declare that to the world that I am now choosing to feel happy. Now, do I feel angry still? Yeah, I still feel angry. But I'm setting an intention to, I am happy. Mm-hmm. See it, feel it, hear it, breathe through it. And then tune into how you feel. And tune in and notice if there's any difference. Notice what it feels to be present after you do that. And if it feels different, then you know it's working. Mm-hmm. Then you know you might as well just keep doing it. If you don't feel any different, then then don't do it. But I have not found that to be the case.
Mm-hmm. You just need to sort of give yourself the ability to choose and believe that you can choose. Because if you're sitting there thinking, "No, this is all nonsense. You can't choose your emotions," then you have a self-limiting belief getting in the way. That's sort of undermining everything that you're trying.
Your emotions, they are reactive. Even the positive ones will react in a positive way. It's just how you perceive life is whether they will react in a positive way or a negative way. So you can't choose the emotions. What you can choose is how you respond to them. Mm-hmm. That you can choose. And if it's an emotion that you wouldn't choose, then your response is to listen to it, see it, and feel it, hear it, and then shift it. That's how you can respond to it. So you can't quite choose emotions, but you can choose how you respond to it. And consistent practice in the morning, at night, are key throughout the day. Before you go in a big meeting, I do this all the time with my team. I visualize, what would I want the perfect meeting? Okay, I'm going to meet with some executives. We're going to do a pitch. I'm going to pretend it's happening right now. I am delivering an amazing pitch. We're getting a commitment to do this deal. It's going to be one of the biggest deals ever. The room is totally engaged. You know, we're having great dialogue. It's a true partnership. I'm just having a great meeting. And how does that make you feel? I'm in a great meeting. I feel like super grateful and just excited. Okay, see that, feel that, and hear that. I do that in the car before I go into the meeting, or I do it in the lobby as I'm waiting to go in the meeting. I'll do it the night before as I'm preparing for the meeting. I do all of those things because I've noticed that my meetings had they had a better outcome if I had done a little bit of pre-work, not just the tactical stuff on the research of the company, but the mind stuff before the meeting. And then after the meeting, it's like, okay, you know, and we get our team together, you know, our solution engineers, account managers, and we visualize what we want that meeting to really do. And we pretend as if it's happening right now. We connect to the feeling of that. It's an amazing process. It really is so fun to, and I'm so honored to like have learned this and share it with others. It makes a big difference.
Incredible. And now it's obviously had a huge impact in your sales career, which is, I mean, anybody that's top 5% consistently and President's Club, you know, 5 out of 6 years, pretty impressive. Now, how many reps would you say you're working with to share this?
Well, we've got about 1,300 reps around the world that that I'm responsible for helping them be more productive. So, you know, it's a rollout for sure. You know, we've probably hit 200 or 300 of them so far, and you know, we're just working our way throughout the organization.
Wow! So, and you're teaching basically what we've talked about, a version of what we've talked about today.
That's part of it. Of course, I do touch on strategic account planning, on negotiations and discovery skills and putting together a point of view and a business case and proposals and a lot of other things. So it's not like the tactical stuff doesn't make sense. It absolutely does. But it's that plus the mind stuff, and adding 1 + 1 actually equals like 3x, 10x. You know, so yeah, absolutely. I'm weaving that in. The stress management is a really important component for sellers who are out there, you know, and they're soldiers. We're soldiers out in the field, in the battle. Mm-hmm. Might as well just have fun with it and treat it like a game and not take this stuff so seriously. And when we have these negative emotions, just deal with them. It's fine. It's no big deal.
Because while it is a battle and we use that analogy, nobody's actually going to die if they don't negotiate on your proposal, or if you bomb a sales call or mess up a demo or whatever. Like,
it's a game. I call a game of chutes and ladders. You remember that game as a child, right?
Yeah.
You climb the ladder, you know, up in an organization, and then they knock you down to procurement. You go down there and you climb the ladder, and then they put you back into IT. And, you know, it is one big chutes and ladder games. And we put together puzzles by reporting structures and who reports to who. And we pull in other resources. It is a sporting event. And, you know, we do this. We spend a lot of time in this profession. And so if you're not having fun, then you have to shift your perception, or you got to shift your position. One of those two.
Well said, Mike. I know we're right sort of on time for the episode, but I know there was one story that you wanted to talk about a particular CIO. We won't say the name of the company, but you were telling me about this story about they didn't have the tools they needed to deal with a certain situation. Can you maybe elaborate for everybody?
Yeah, so, you know, we did a pretty big deal with this company. And after we did the deal, the CIO was frustrated because she didn't have a business to charge back to, and she felt like she overbought. And anyways, you know, we sold a lot of stuff to this company and she was banging on the table. She's walking around and she's like, this is the worst deal I've ever done. I could get fired for this in all of my years. This is the first time I've done a bad deal, and it's your fault, and we need to redo the contract, and we need to, you know, lower the commitment. And, you know, and there was probably 7 people in the room, and everybody's upset and they're nervous and they're like, uh-oh, she's on a warpath. And I sat there because I know how the mind works and I know she's coming from a subconscious place. I don't take these things personal. So I can't help myself. The more angry she gets, I get a big smile and I'm just like, you know, just kind of listening. But I think it's comical. I think it's funny now to see people in such reactive states. I think it's kind of funny. So she is just saying, I've never done this before. No. And so I stood up, you know, and I was like, I shook her hand and I was like, congratulations. I'm so impressed. Good job. You know, really. And she's like, I'm like, that is amazing. All the years you've been in business and this is the first time that you've done a bad deal? That is incredible. You're going to learn so much from this experience. you know, you're really going to be more efficient and effective in the future. And I'm like really honored to like be the one to, you know,
to help you get there. Process.
And it just, it rattled her cage. It broke her out of that subconscious reaction. I didn't react to it, because the other thing is, when someone's coming from a reactive place and you react to their reactions, now you just got this endless back and forth of reacting to reactions.
This cycle that's...
And it doesn't do anything. Hmm. So the more someone is reactive, the more still and calm I am, and I allow it to go through me. And I'll try to find some way to break them out of that reactive pattern. And she did. She broke out of it. And then she just kind of smiled. And she just like was kind of laughing that I said something so audacious. But I said it with a place of playful, like a child. And she's like, okay, you know, I know we did this deal and we signed it, but let's figure out how we can, you know, make the best of the situation and talk about driving more adoption. And we had a real... a meaningful conversation that was very productive, but it wasn't until she broke out of her reactive pattern by me saying some crazy stuff. That's when we can have a meaningful conversation.
And you basically had to disrupt the loop of negativity.
That's right.
Using something creative, but the only, like, that's sort of advanced tactic, but the only way that you were able to get there was you weren't reacting to her.
I was not reacting at all. Everyone else was reacting. They were holding it in, but you can read the room. They were nervous. They were anxious. They were angry. They tensed up. Those are all things they wouldn't choose. So they were all coming from a self-conscious place. I was choosing to feel like thought it was funny. And I wasn't mad at all. I was like, this is kind of cool. So I was not in a reactive place. And when you're not, you're powerful. You are really powerful. People really can't touch. You're untouchable.
Because what was going through your head when she was saying all these things?
Well, like, obviously, at first, I'm like, oh, your deal. Boy. Yeah. At first, I'm like, geez, you know, this sucks. This is like, this is going to be a pain in the butt, you know. At first, no one likes to deal with that situation. But as she got more and more wound up and she kept repeating herself and she started pacing, that's when it shifted to kind of being funny to me. It's like, wow, she's really reacting to this. And like, people like have serious issues in this world. Is this really that big of a deal? You know what I mean? No one's dying here. And she's acting like, so there, because it went on for a while, that's when I was like, oh, it's kind of interesting to watch. This is quite an amazing subconscious reaction. This is really impressive in a way. Mm-hmm.
And so you're sort of labeling her emotions as a subconscious reaction. And
yeah,
so that's how you just let it pass right through.
It's just a reactive part based on a programming belief that she has on how she grew up. That's all. Mm-hmm. It's just, she's doing her best. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have the tools to process it, to harmonize it, to shift it, to work on herself. She just doesn't have the tool. Most people don't. And that's okay. We live in a world of highly reactive people. I'm just choosing not to be one of those.
Man, it seems like you're in this situation, in this podcast, you're just on a whole, your mindset puts you on a whole other plane from us mere mortals.
Change, shift of perspective is such a gift. It's such a powerful gift. But with it comes responsibility, because once you know, then you can't blame anybody else for anything anymore. You can't even blame yourself. You have to apply it. And, you know, it's not for everybody, but for those that really want to be superhuman, especially in sales, the tactical with the mindset, the mind, the heart, and the will, and getting them in alignment and having fun, treating it like a game, coming from a place of gratitude and love is the way that we want to live our lives.
Couldn't say it any better myself. Mike, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to track you down?
LinkedIn, Mike Fiasconi. Go ahead and reach out, connect with me, and I'd love to talk to anybody else that You know, this is one of my favorite conversations, so I'm always open to any kind of dialogue around this.
You can tell by the, I can tell by the way your eyes light up when we talk about the subject. Just if anybody's got questions, that you're more than happy to jump in and help out and
lend
a couple recommendations.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks, Colin. It's been a pleasure.